It's 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning, U.S. Senator John Bozeman. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, Mark. Thanks so much for having me, as always.
You were listening a few minutes ago to a story about the Ebola outbreak in Africa and the concern about that spreading. And, of course, there's been concern by a lot of people here in America about it spreading here because of, people traveling and plus the couple of patients that have been brought to an Atlanta hospital for treatment. How concerned should we be about this outbreak in America and overall?
I'm not concerned about the patients that have been brought to Atlanta. Certainly they will be taken care of in a way that really would minimize almost to the point of zero of spreading the disease. However, we live in a small world right now, and with travel the way it is and things, certainly the possibility of bringing in disease from other places is high, and so it's something that we need to guard against. I've been a little bit concerned as I've listened to the stories and read what's going on, is that the number of healthcare professionals, that have contracted the disease. So it seems to be, when you have healthcare professionals, because, of course, they're in the trenches, doing the work and dealing with the people, but I know they're taking precaution, and so it does seem to be very, very infectious.
Well, and the healthcare professionals, from what I understand, are the ones most at risk for exposure because of being around it so much.
Yes. But they're supposed to, with this particular disease, they're hazmated up almost, mm-hmm. With suits and things, and yet, it's just, it is a worry because of that. Right. But with travel being the way it is, it's something that we certainly have to be on guard against.
Well, the last time we talked, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the situation in Israel and Gaza. There's a ceasefire there right now that is holding, it appears, for now. But the two sides are coming together for talks in Cairo. Is there hope for any kind of agreement to be reached there?
I think there's hope for an agreement as far as a ceasefire in dealing with Hamas, as far as Hamas recognizing Israel's right to exist. I think that there's little chance in that. That's really the real sticking point. It's difficult to negotiate with an entity that basically says that you don't have the right to exist and will do everything that they can to get rid of you. So hopefully we can get a ceasefire. The Israelis have done a good job of getting rid of the tunnels that were built and done some things that will allow them to protect themselves for a little bit. And then I'm sure, several years down the road, hopefully it'll be several years, we'll probably have the same thing erupt.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people of Gaza apparently just want simply the border to be open to allow people and goods to go
right.
in and out. And can Israel agree to this?
Well, hopefully they can to some degree. The problem is that in doing that, making the border very open, then you have the smuggling going on where you're smuggling the things that Hamas wants to make it difficult on Israel. It's a difficult situation. So what I would hope is that they would agree to disagree for a bit. The people that suffer is, as you mentioned, are just the average person on the street that lives in that region. They're the ones that are bearing the brunt of this.
Yeah. Now, you've expressed continued support of Israel and its right to defend itself. And, of course, any nation has a right to defend itself against attacks. But those who are criticizing Israel point to the numbers, over 1,000 killed in Gaza, mostly civilians, while Israel's had only 3 civilian deaths and I believe about 64 soldiers killed in fighting. Could Israel have done more to prevent civilian casualties?
Well, the only reason that Israel has not suffered a lot more civilian deaths is because of the Iron Dome, mm-hmm. the technology that they've created to prevent them. But Hamas has done everything they can to inflict as much death and terror as they could. They just haven't been very successful in doing it. The problem, as I understand it, is that the leaders of Hamas hide the weapons that they have inside of they use human shields, and so that makes it very, very difficult when you're trying to get to the weapons, get to the you know, the things that are wreaking havoc when you use civilians as shields for the targets.
It's a very unusual situation, which I understand Israel is actually making phone calls to people and distributing
yes.
leaflets, letting people know, hey, we're about to attack here. So.
Yes.
No,
I think that shows that they really are trying to do all they can to get, you know, civilians out of the way, dropping leaflets, as you say, you know, making phone calls and things. So it's just a very difficult situation, and hopefully, you know, we'll get some lull in the action very soon.
Just one last question about that crisis. I wonder from your perspective, is there, you know, people have been concerned about maybe Israel's going too far, and, you know, we can discuss that. But from your perspective, is there any point at which Israel could go too far and we would need to say, look, we can't support you any further in this?
Well, I don't, you know, Israel is a great ally. They have the same values that we have, so I just don't see that happening, you know, any more than we have to worry about the British going too far or, you know, whoever. So, you know, we would cross that bridge if we came to it, but right now I think with, you know, you can imagine our reaction if, you know, thousands of rockets were being lobbed into Arkansas, and Israel is a very tiny place. So I think the reaction would be swift, and we would do whatever it took, you know, to maintain our sovereignty and to eliminate those that were lobbing the missiles.
Okay. Well, from that crisis to one closer to home, you visited a border patrol station last week along with several other senators. Of course, we've had this influx of unaccompanied minors from Central American countries who've come up apparently through Mexico and entered the U.S. The White House requested $3.7 billion, I understand, in emergency funds to deal with this crisis. The Senate voted on $2.7 billion. Senator Pryor supported that. You did not. Why not?
Well, the president basically wanted a blank check and was really just trying to throw money at the problem. As far as the humanitarian crisis, that required, you know, just in the billions of dollars to get us by until we could really look at what was needed. There was no reform in the package that the president sent over. There was nothing to do to actually stem the tide. And so as a result, myself, I think almost every Republican voted against it, probably every Republican. And many, many Democrats were also concerned. And that's why they dropped down the level that was asked for initially. It was dropped down considerably.
And tell me about your visit to the Border Patrol station last week.
Well, really had a good visit. There's no substitute for getting down there and then actually talking to the people on the ground, the Border Patrol people that are actually doing the work. I think everyone agreed down there that the only way to stem the tide is to make it such that the people that are trying to get across, you know, don't get across and are sent back in a timely basis. Once the paperwork's done, once they're giving the hearing, whatever they're entitled to, but when it's determined that they're not eligible to be in our country, they need to go back almost immediately. What that does is send a message to the countries that are sending them that they're not going to be allowed to stay. Until recently, the message that was sent via people on cell phones and things was, come on up, you know, we were detained and now we've been released into the United States. Now the message is, you know, we're in detention, we're being held until we're processed, and then, you know, probably we're going to get sent back. As a result of that, the numbers have gone down significantly.
Well, and one of the arguments about this issue is that many people see those coming over the border not as immigrants but as refugees from countries that are riddled with violence and unrest. Should we treat them as refugees?
Well, I think that's a difficult situation. You know, you look across the world, you know, there's so many places that are at, you know, with tremendous violence, tremendous unrest. The question is, how do you go about doing that? And you have to have an orderly process. You can't just have whoever shows up at the border, you know, taken care of in the sense that there is a finite amount of numbers that we can deal with. And that really was shown. I mean, we were simply overwhelmed for a while, and that's not a good situation. I think the American public, want to be helpful. They want to do all they can. On the other hand, we do have finite resources, and it needs to be done in an orderly way.
Could we set up an Ellis Island-type facility where they could be quickly processed and either documented or screened out for deportation?
Well, that's essentially what they're doing right now. The facilities that they have, they have medical facilities now and things to screen them for, medical problems. So they're really doing all of that. And the processing time that is taken now that they've got the manpower that they need and things, or more manpower, they're able to do that in a much more timelier fashion. And as a result of that, most of these people are not eligible, and so they're having to go back. And that's really what is stemming the tide right now and lowering the numbers. The other thing that's happened with this is an organized crime effort. There's all kinds of people that are, the people that we saw, most of them had paid anywhere from $4,000 to $20,000 to have somebody bring them up to the border. And make it such that they could turn themselves in. This is organized crime. These are coyotes that are down in the Central American countries, preying on these people. And so, there's just many facets to this that need to be stopped.
Well, we got to move quickly and get just a few minutes left. The president is expected to sign, I believe, reforms into the VA into law this week. The Senate passed the reform bill before breaking for the August recess and also confirmed the new Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Yes, and I'm really excited about Bob McDonald, the new secretary. He excelled in the military, got out of the military, and then went to work in the private sector. And I think he's going to do a tremendous job and provide the leadership that we need. The bill that was passed, and again, this, when it comes to veterans, that's a very bipartisan effort. After a lot of negotiation, I think we came up with a very good bill that is going to provide more resources, more doctors, more nurses, to the VA system to make sure that they're in good shape that way. But also, there's real reform in there. It makes it such that those that are in positions of authority can actually be fired. Until this bill was signed or will be signed today, that's been very, very difficult to do, to hold people accountable, which is really what it's all about.
And how will we know if these reforms are having a positive effect in the VA?
Well, it's just something that we're going to have to not forget about. The idea that the law's passed and we're doing things, we can't just move on to the next subject. We're going to have to continue to hold the hearings. And again, accountability is the key.
Congress passed a short-term spending bill to prop up the Highway Trust Fund through May, I believe. Tell us about this negotiation, how this came about.
Well, the Highway Trust Fund, we were able to come up with a short-term solution, which I supported, but I also support a long-term solution. So this buys a little bit of time to allow us to get what I'd like to see, a five-year bill, because highways, roads, those kind of projects take a lot of money. They take a lot of time. So you have to have a funding stream that that you can count on. So we're going to be working very, very hard in the next few months to come up with some solution so that we can make the Highway Trust Fund solvent again.
Yeah, there may be a lot to disagree on, but we should be able to agree that our roads and bridges are in need of a lot of work and do whatever it takes to strengthen that infrastructure that literally moves our economy.
No, I agree, Mark, and I think you could argue that that's, one of the great assets that we've had as a country is tremendous infrastructure. It's getting old now. It's wearing out. It's interesting, you pointed out that we need to get along and do this. This is an area that Democrats and Republicans really do agree on. The two people that shepherded the last highway bill were Barbara Boxer and Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma. They don't have a lot in common, but they very much believe that the federal government needs to be spending on infrastructure.
You and Senator Pryor have introduced legislation addressing concerns with proposed expansion of critical habitat designations. Tell us about that bill.
Well, what the bill does is it makes them establish the ramifications of going ahead with the critical habitat designation, how it's going to affect the various entities, whether it's from an economic standpoint, the farm community, all of the ramifications that it takes when you make the endangered species designation. And they can be tremendous. A lot of the water problems in the farming areas of California are, they are greatly, they're in a situation that, the rules that have been put in place have really made it such that it's limited agricultural water supply and things like that. So just looking at making sure that when we pass these things that we really understand what we're doing and how it's going to affect real people.
You got an annual agriculture tour that starts next week.
We do, and we'll be in eastern Arkansas, and we'll be to a lot of diverse places, such as honey farms. We'll be out in the fields with the rice growers and just a number of different things. So this is always a fun time of the year so that we can tout agriculture. Mm-hmm. 1 in 6 jobs in Arkansas are dependent on it, about 25% of our economy. So it really is vital, reminding people that we're the things that we can enjoy at probably the lowest price in the world, the safest food supply in the world, where all that stuff comes from.
We're about out of time today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Senator John Bozeman joining us by phone from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.